My name is Paul and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Paul.
And it's good to be here and it's good to be sober. And I want to thank the committee for giving me the opportunity to come out here and share my experience, strength and hope with you tonight. Thank you so much, Shirelli. And I really enjoyed myself here so far. You know, I don't know why I can't. I mean, I don't know if I'm nervous or it's hot in here. I don't know why I can't. I always seem to forget that in June in Palm Springs, it's only 3 miles from the sun, you know. And you know, I caught myself on this time when I went down to the pool today. I brought my dental records with me, you know, and just to make it easier for them to identify my body at 5 o'clock, you know, and and it's funny, when I was driving out here from Los Angeles yesterday, I was in the car, you're driving in the car, and it's, you know, it gives you the outside temperature, 80 degrees, 90 degrees, 140 degrees, 371 degrees, you know. You're an eye at the sun, you know, and it's good to be here and it's good to be sober. And someone said to me that Palm Springs is like the Florida of the West Coast, you know, and a lot of retirees here. Well, I've been to Florida a lot of times. These guys look a lot better, you know what I'm saying? And my sponsor brought me down to Florida there recently. We went to a meeting. I should have realized the name of the meeting was the Waxworks. And we go to this meeting. He says it's a night meeting. The meeting was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you know. And we had dinner at 2 o'clock. The meeting was at 4 o'clock. And when I walked in, it was amazing, like, and everybody was wearing, like, those big black wraparound sunglasses, you know. And when I first walked in, I says, man, this is some meeting. Check this out, a virtual AA meeting, you know. I mean, this is really high tech, you know. And well, I'd like to tell you a bit about how it was, what happened there, and how it is today. And hopefully the next four and a half hours, I should be able to wrap it all up, you know. And I just seen the blood drain in a newcomer's face over here. You know, he was like bright red, and he's like Casper the Ghost, you know. And this may come as a shock to some people here tonight, but I'm not from the neighborhood originally. It's about 25 years now since I left my native Cuba, and I'm from the same part of Ireland as Tim up in the north of Ireland. And the Irish, we talk fast, drunk or sober, and I'm actually feeling quite sorry for the people that are signing over here, you know, for the meeting tonight, you know. They're probably like, you know, I went to do service and now I've got carpal tunnel syndrome. Thanks a lot, you know. What was this rush? You know, the guy gives a 60-minute talk in 9.5 minutes, you know, and I'm sitting here with my wrists in 2 buckets of ice, you know. And And if there's anybody that's new here tonight, I want to welcome you to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I often tell this joke, and I only have about 3 jokes. They're on like an endless loop, and I'm extremely codependent, so please laugh, even if you haven't heard it before, you know. And if you're new here tonight, there's a newcomer, and he's talking to a sponsor, and he says, our sponsor's talking to him, and the sponsor says, how long are you sober now? The guy says, 90 days. He says, just think where you were 90 days ago. And the sponsee says, well, actually, I was sitting in a hot tub, half drunk, surrounded by beautiful women in bikinis. And the sponsor says, isn't it wonderful that you don't have to live that way anymore today, you know? So maybe you're sitting out there tonight, is this it, you know? And but I want to welcome the newcomers. I want to welcome the members of Al-Anon. And I also want to welcome any non-alcoholics that are here tonight. I'm actually fascinated by non-alcoholics. You know, I almost look at them from an anthropological point of view, you know? And, you know, there's an alcoholic, there's an Al-Anon, and there's a normal, I guess, you know? And and maybe you can identify with this if you're a non-alcoholic. There's a guy who's in recovery, and he's out on a blind date with a normal drinker. And he's having a glass of water. She's having a glass of wine. And she says, you don't drink. He says, no, I don't drink. She says, you don't drink at all. He says, not at all. Not even one drink? Not even one. I don't touch this stuff. She goes, what would happen if you took one drink? He said, well, just imagine you woke up in the middle of nowhere. Your credit cards are gone. Your watch is gone. Your car keys are gone. You're disorientated. You don't know where you are. You don't know what day it is. You don't know anything. She goes, that would happen to you if you took one drink. He says, no, what happened to you if I took one drink? You know, so I'm just, I said, I'm here to tell you about my experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, I don't know why I became an alcoholic, where I became an alcoholic, when I became an alcoholic. You know, the old alcoholic conundrum, what came first, the chicken or the keg, you know, and a few guys that got drunk trying to figure that one out, you know, and my upbringing was like Eugene O'Neill's Long Day's Journey into Night. There was alcoholism in one side of the family and mental illness in the other side of the family. I'm not here to point any fingers, but let me just tell you this. When I took my first breath, I blew a .28, you know, and I could have been taken from the delivery room right to the AA room, you know. You see that newcomer in the bassinet, give him a white chip, you know, and I imagine, like, I used to think, you know, why, whatever. I imagine if you talk to enough professionals, you can probably figure out why you took the first drink. Peer pressure, rite of passage, curiosity. But why the compulsive drinking that sets me aside from the normal heavy drinker? I can remember, like it was yesterday, the first night I drank, there was four or five guys. It's probably happening in a neighborhood close to here tonight. Four or five people getting together and whacking up a bottle of booze or whacking up a case of beer. Why out of those four or five, like out of the four or five guys that I sat with who I know to this day, why was I the one guy that would burn his life to the ground over and over and over again? I don't know the answer to that question. I could probably figure out why they took the first drink. But why the compulsive drinking that separates me from the normal heavy drinker, I have no idea. But I'm just telling you that for here tonight to share my experience, strength, and hope, that this is the last thing I tried and the first thing that ever worked. I tried every other way of stopping drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous is for me the greatest singular event in my life. I come in here in the worst night of my life, as we do. And is not the grace of God to come in here in the worst night of your life and be given the grace not to drink? And it's so much more than grace. It's mercy. And what is mercy? Mercy is entering into the chaos of another person's life. And when in 1992, when everybody in my life in August of 1992 was going that way, and rightly so, the only people coming this way was Alcoholics Anonymous. And they carried this message. My message mightn't even keep me sober. This message, and the message that we have here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I believe this, and I believe it so much that I bet my life on a daily basis. When complete defeat through alcohol, step one, meets hope in human form, step 12, recovery can and will begin. And I say that, I've come in here in 1992, and I say that not to impress you, but to impress upon you the power that it's in Alcoholics Anonymous. We do together what I can't do alone. Here we are tonight. We come from all walks of life. Gender, color, creed, it matters not. We are survivors from the sinking ship. I mightn't have stood next to you in the bar, but when you say you're an alcoholic, I know enough. I know you've experienced terror, frustration, bewilderment, and despair. I know you put a drink to your lips as the tears roll down your face and you drank it anyway. I know that friends and family and loved ones pleaded with you not to drink and you drank. I know, like in my life, at the end of my drinking, for goodness sake, I drank against my own will. And I would sit there in my apartment and I would look out at people going to work and I wanted to be where they were. But I had ostracized myself. I had banished myself. But Alcoholics Anonymous, because of the magnificent reality that is AA, a bridge back to life. Bill Wilson says that Alcoholics Anonymous is not a success story. It's a chronicle of human failure. I'm here because I failed. I failed at drinking. I failed at living. I failed at living with drinking. I failed at living without drink. All my scorecards read zero. And I come in here and the hope in human form. And people here, and we all have worth, because this is God's economy. And in God's economy, everyone has worth and value. And the coin of the realm here tonight is experience, strength, and hope. And we'll see in the count up here later on this weekend, we have the newcomers that was talked about. We have our old timers. And then the guys like me, you got to watch for middle management. We know just enough to destroy this thing, you know? What happens if I turn this button this way, you know? An alcoholic slam, as we can trace this moment in time back to that moment in time when Bill Wilson, our birthday is coming up soon, in June 10th. And that time, and they met each other before that in May, when Bill Wilson first met Dr. Bob. And Bill Wilson, sober 6 months in New York, had come across the idea of trying to help another alcoholic would help him stay sober. And we know the story, but it bears being told again. The turning point in all of our lives, past and present. When Bill Wilson, and the funny thing about it was, when Bill Wilson went to speak to Dr. Bob, and Dr. Bob was a bit, and I've had the good fortune to stand in that gatehouse in Akron, and the lady described it so well. And we were there on the actual day and the time that they first met. And she says, Dr. Bob was so hungover that he couldn't even drive his own car. His 15-year-old son drove the car and he came in. And Laurie mentioned this earlier on, a 15-minute meeting. I'm so hungover. I just want to get off the hook. And they spoke for 5 hours. And Dr. Bob said, and I mentioned this in the members' eye view, Dr. Bob said that Bill Wilson didn't talk about Dr. Bob's drinking. Bill Wilson talked about Bill Wilson's drinking. And that's what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill Wilson didn't say, you know, I haven't drank in 6 months, and you should do this and this and this. He said, I haven't drank in 6 months, and this is what I did. We would rather see a sermon than hear one. And Alcoholics Anonymous is one of those few places in the world. It's not in the theoretical. This is pure pragmatism. People die drunk till they got this thing right. This is not a theoretical exercise. This is pure pragmatism. They talk about FDA approved. People died drunk that they got this thing right. And we come in here and we share, as I said, our experience, strength, and hope. How we drank, how we got sober, and how the new person might get sober. And I'm so glad that we have this convention here tonight. Because I guarantee you, I'd never been in this town before, but if I left here, I wouldn't have to go too far, and I'll find somebody drinking themselves to death right now, oblivious to what's going on in here. And our job is to keep that door open for the still sick and suffering alcoholic, whether it be inside or outside of this room. I don't want to be here like that iconic Don McLean song. I don't want to be here the day the music died. This is on our watch right now. And the Toby and Alcoholics Anonymous, if you can't leave a better place, at least leave it the same so the next person gets sober. You know, thank you. And alcohol did for me, if another man had it did to me, what drink did to me, I'll like kill him with my bare hands. And I don't know why I'm an alcoholic. All I know is today that I got a body that won't let me drink and a mind that won't let me stop. I'm powerless over alcohol. My life's unmanageable, drunk or sober, if I'm running it, and I like to run it a lot. I accept today that one drink creates a thirst I can't quench. I accept today that one drink, destination unknown. I accept today that, like the story in one of our books, when I controlled my drink and I couldn't enjoy it, and when I enjoyed my drink and I couldn't control it, and that separates me from the normal heavy drinker. I started off as a kid, 13 or 14 years of age, and alcohol took me to the cleaners. And this is what alcohol will do. In The Merchant of Venice, Shylock wanted just 1 pound of flesh, not this disease. It'll take your job, it'll take your car, it'll take your wife, it'll take the shirt off your back, but what it really wants is me 6 feet under. I believe of all terminal diseases, this is one of the most terminal. If I hadn't stopped drinking, drinking would have stopped me. I bartended the last 5 years drinking, and I bartended the first 12 years in AA. I'm here to tell you what you probably know already. Most alcoholics die drunk. They don't even hear VA. So I feel blessed that I got here, heard this message, and was able to put my life back together one day at a time. As used to say in the old South Bronx group, it's a cinch by the inch, it's hard by the yard, and we just do it one day at a time. And I'm so glad at my first meeting there wasn't a guy with a clipboard, because I would have checked the box for not drinking. I would have been delighted with that. But I got so much more than that. I got me back, I got you back, and I got him back. Alcohol is only mentioned the first half of the first step. The other 11 and a half steps helped me do something I couldn't do drunk or sober, and that's live out there in God's world under his conditions rather than my demands, and live life one day at a time. I'm not going to stand up here like some snake oil salesman tonight and promise you the moon and the stars. There's things that I lost through drinking, they're not coming back. There's things that you lost through drinking, they're not coming back either. But thank God, because of this program, we can live with our past today. Who among us could live with the guilt and the shame and remorse if it wasn't for the 12 steps to alleviate that? I'm here, I believe the 12 steps, we don't do the steps because they're nice. We do them because they're necessary for recovery. If I want to get physically and mentally and spiritually and emotionally rehabilitated, I have to work this program. I've tried every other way of filling that hole in my soul, and nothing worked until I came in here. All my scorecards read zero. And I've been to jumping off place twice in my life. Once with drink and once without drink. Sitting in AA. No drink, no program. A different type of pain, but pain nonetheless. And I'm still trying to fill that hole in my soul. There's not enough stuff out there to fill that hole. And I try to fill it with people and places and things. I had some symbolic victories along the way, but nothing of any permanence. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was a wall builder. And as Robert Frost says, a wall's a good thing. Well, maybe if you're a New England farmer, but not if you're an alcoholic. I built these walls, and I built them high, and I built them deep. I wasn't getting out, and you weren't getting in. And if I'm doing A alone, this is even true to this day. If I'm doing A alone, I ain't doing AA. There's a friend of mine who says it's BB. I said, what's BB? He said, I don't know, but it's not AA. I took that drink, and it's been said many times, the black and white to color in one drink. 15 or 16 years of age, and everything went on the back burner. I'm the sort of a guy who took a drink at 15 or 16 years of age. You might find me lying in your front yard and drunk on a Sunday morning at 17 or 18. I'm not here to point the finger. I was a finger pointer for years. I'm here to tell you good parents that tried the best for me, but I drank until there was nothing left. It's no coincidence I'm standing in America with an Irish accent. I was a runner, a long-distance runner. Always looking for an outside fix for an inside job. Always thinking I get things lined up there, but I could just get the right job in the right neighborhood in the right country. And nothing worked. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, always putting the cart before the horse. You know, and my life was falling apart in short order. I was getting my stomach pumped out in school nights and things like that. My parents didn't know what to do with me. 19 or 20 years of age, 21. I'm a dreamer. I'm always looking for the... I'm a grandstander. And I come home and I said to my father, listen, I'm thinking of going to America. And don't try and talk me out of it. He says, talk you out of it. I'll help you pack when you're leaving. On you go, Columbus. Let me give you some fatherly advice. Turn left at Greenland, you know? And I hopped on the only airline to fly if you're an alcoholic, Aer Lingus, Ireland's national airline. The plane's still going down the runway and they're serving booze. The planes are like a 45 degree angle taking off, and the cabin crew are like Sherpas pushing the drinks carts up to the front, you know? And everybody's ringing their bell looking drink, bing, 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 bing. You're thinking of a pinball machine rather than an airplane, you know? And like driftwood, I washed up in a place called Rockaway Beach, New York. There's always somebody knows Rockaway Beach. You talk to like the old time New Yorkers, they go, oh, Rockaway Beach, the Irish Riviera. It should have been called Cirrhosis by the Sea. They had more alcoholics per square foot. And there was two types of people in that town, those in AA and those that should have been in AA, you know? Here I am, you know, going to make it big in America, you know, and I got a job as a bartender. And I'm using the word bar here in the loosest possible context. I worked in a bar, it was a silver bar you got thrown into rather than out of, you know, and this bar had it all, alcoholics, drug addicts, degenerate gamblers, and that was just the staff, it wasn't even the customers, you know. I'll give you a mental picture and I'll move on. Maybe you can identify. If you want to see a full set of teeth in this bar, you need 32 customers, you know, and that's male and female, you know. Every now and again, like a glamour girl with three teeth would come in, upset the whole ecosystem of the bar, you know. Hey, baby, where have you been, you know? This was me making it big in America. But what I did was, like all my life as an alcoholic, it helped me move the line of scrimmage. I would draw these lines. If I ever drink in the morning, I was a morning drinker for years. I was in a job. This is how bad my drinking. I was in a job where I worked at, used to bartend from 6 at night to 4 in the morning. I was in a job where I could go to work, walk behind the bar at 6 o'clock, pour myself a drink, put it in the speed rack. At the end of my drink, and I couldn't even get there. My nerves were shot. I couldn't get on elevators. The subway would come in. I put my back against the wall. I was full of fears and phobias and hang-ups, neurosis. My nerves were completely shot, and I drank on, and I drank on, and I drank on. The worst years of my drinking, 27 to 30, were after I made a firm conviction not to drink again. And I would do what it says in chapter 3. I would make these oaths and proclamations. I would go off it for Lent and I'll do this and physical exercise and whatever, and nothing worked. Nothing worked till I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, and maybe you can identify this if you're new tonight, because before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had nothing between me and the first drink. If you're new here tonight, please get something between you and the first drink. Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, the thought of a drink would become the obsession to drink, an obsession, an idea that crowds out all other ideas. And then the reality of drinking. And once the clock started ticking, I had no way of stopping the clock. Tonight, not because of me, because of the collective power of AA, I have something between me and the first drink tonight. We have a symbol here in Alcoholics Anonymous, an emblem. It's a triangle inside a circle, and there's three parts to it: unity, service, and recovery. I don't care if you're at your first meeting tonight. I believe that you can put all three parts of that triangle into your life from your very first meeting. Unity. We do together what I can't do alone. Many meetings make it easy, few make it hard, none make it impossible. I got to be a part of rather than apart from. I got to get right into the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't be on the periphery. Service. I heard a guy say one time, the highest pay grade in Alcoholics Anonymous is serving. Why? Because I'm shackled to self. I got to learn to function for the well-being of another person besides myself, to break down the bondage of self one day at a time. If you put away one more chair than the one you sat on, you're doing service in Alcoholics Anonymous. Congratulations. Recovery. Maybe the 12 steps seem like a foreign concept. We have slogans. Easy does it. Live and let live. One day at a time. They were like the banisters to the steps for me. I'm here to tell you, not in the theoretical, but in the pragmatic. You can stay dry on two parts of the triangle. I've done it. You can stay dry on one part of the triangle. I've done that. But if you want to be sober, if you want to be free, if you want to be free from the one guy you couldn't get free from, which is myself, if I want to live in the one place that I never lived, which is right here, right now, I got to put all three parts into my life, and I got to do it every day. That's the type of alcoholic I am. I was down in Las Vegas one time and watching these guys play Texas Hold'em, and the guy stood up and he says, I'm all in. That's the way I got to be in AA. I got to be all in, and I got to be all in every day. Because this disease is cunning, baffling, powerful. I seen guys drink again in AA that I thought would never drink again. I'm not taking an inventory, but that tells me that this disease, people say, oh, the disease is out in the parking lot, dude. Not my disease. My disease is sitting right here. It's been at every meeting I've been at. It's heard everything I've heard. And it's funny how you leave Alcoholics Anonymous. You leave Alcoholics Anonymous, I've sponsored guys, you don't even know you're leaving. It's a drift. It's almost a glacial drift. And you drift away, and you let this go, and you let that go, and then there you wake up, and you've got nothing between you and the first drink. And as a guy said to me one time, when I got right down to it, I wanted to drink more than I wanted to stay sober. And I don't want that to be, so I want to learn from the experience of others and be here. So I came in alcoholic. I would try to stop drinking. I had nothing between me and the first drink. From 27 to 30, my life's falling apart. I'm hitting hospitals. I'm locked up for drink and strapped down for drink. Convulsions, seizures, round-the-clock drunks. And I drink again, and I drink again, and I drink again. And it's one more attempt at drinking, followed by one more failure at not drinking, followed by one more attempt at drinking. I would keep getting back in the ring. Getting back into the ring was like getting into the ring with a heavyweight champion. A child could have said, don't get in the ring. But don't get in the ring means don't take a drink. And before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not able not to take a drink because I had nothing between me and the first drink. And I drink again. I'll give you one vignette. And it's sort of like, I found it the hard way. I almost paid the price with my life. That a drinking problem is solved by not drinking. But I suffer from alcoholism. And that's a horse of a different color. It's physical. It's mental. It's spiritual. And in my case, it's wrapped up in a body full of sick emotions. Not drinking, as Bill Wilson says, it's a start. But it's just a brief start. It must be followed up by something else. I would come off the worst drunks with a firm conviction. As a friend of mine says, Paul, if they'd have put you in a lie detector, you would have passed with flying colors. I am not going to drink again. I would leave a hospital after coming out of a restraining sheet, vowing to my innermost self, that's it. But I left that hospital. I didn't have unity. I didn't have service. I didn't have recovery. I didn't have you. I didn't have me. And I didn't have him. Put an X in the calendar. I'm drinking again. It's a matter, I'll either drink or go off a bridge, and most alcoholics will take a drink first. I'll give you one vignette that really sums up this for me. I collapsed in a bar one day. I was on a bad drunk, and I collapsed in a bar, an alcoholic seizure, and I woke up on a restraining sheet, and they gave me some Librium to get me off the ceiling, and there was a woman who was very close to me at that time, and I took her hand and I said, I will never, ever drink again. I don't know why I can't drink. It's obvious I can't drink, and I'll never drink again. And I left that hospital. But here's what happens to me when I try to stop drinking without unity, service, and recovery, without a 12-step program. People say, oh, you're just an arm's length away from a drink. I'm 12 steps away from a drink. And that's a long, long way from when I first walked in here. But you can backtrack through those steps. Take your will back in 3. Become insane in 2. So insane that I tell myself, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't care. I get drunk in the first step. But I didn't know this before that. I left that hospital with a firm conviction not to drink. But here's the difference between a drinking problem and alcoholism. About a week goes by. I get this stone in my shoe. I don't know where it comes from, but it's there all the time. 2 weeks go by, it's a knot in the stomach. 3 weeks go by, the top button feels tight all the time. A month goes by, it feels like everybody out there is on my case. That's not a drinking problem, that's a living sober problem. And I'm living in a place like New York, one of the most populated cities in the world, and I'm feeling so lost, so bereft of spirit, so detached from humanity. I want to run to somebody and go, they tell me not to drink. I'm trying not to drink. I had not drinking 30 days, but I don't know what's wrong with me. And it's a funny type of insanity. It's not the insanity that you would see in some Victorian halls of Bedlam where you go and you say, well, there's somebody that's really crazy. It's just this shackled to self. Said, me on me. I've just shackled to self. I'm just so painfully aware of myself 24/7. I can't live like that. And I drank again. And nobody was any more surprised than me. And that woman says to me, I got to get away from you. And that's what we do. We just, and if anybody's here from Al-Anon tonight, that's what we do, the alcoholics. We just squeeze and squeeze and squeeze till there's nothing left. And people are like, go in, drink, or go in, don't drink. But you must leave our lives. That's what I do. If you get into my sphere of influence, you're going down regardless of the consequences. And I drank again. And it's amazing what alcoholics do. My mother tracked me down on a Christmas Eve. She called me from Ireland. I'm living in a basement apartment in the Bronx. Everything's gone. Everybody's gone. Here's a recipe for disaster. Sit in your apartment, drinking round the clock, listen to blues music. And the sadder the song, the better I felt. Songs like B.B. King. Nobody loves me but my mother, and she may be jiving me too. Or my all-time favorite Warren Zevon. If you won't leave me, I'll find somebody that will. You know? These are the sort of songs that alcoholics listen to, you know? And my mother tracked me down. She lives over in Northern Ireland with a 5-hour time difference, and it's Christmas Eve. And I'm sitting there, and everything's gone. I got a huge abscess in my mouth. I got the money to go to the dentist twice, and I drank it both times. And she tracks me down. I answer the phone, and she says, Paul, she goes, I went to midnight mass tonight, and I prayed for you. I'm thinking to myself, don't pray for me. I'm beyond the beyond, and I ain't coming back. And I believed it. And I'd like to tell you that I walked outside on Christmas Eve, and there was a light snow falling, and at some Frank Capra moment, I drank on for 3 more years after that. Bottoms to bottoms to bottoms. But I'm here to tell you, as far down as you go with drink, you can come back up again in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm here to tell you, not to impress you, but impress upon you, you cannot get where I am today from where I came from without Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't. It's an impossible journey. And I come here because the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, what is a miracle? A miracle is a complete reversal or upheaval of the laws of nature. It's in my nature to be drunk right now, and I'm not. And how did that happen? Didn't happen because of me. It happened because of the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. It happened because of people taking time out of their lives to put my life back together again one day at a time. And here's where I got. We all have our sobriety stories, and here's mine. There was a woman that I was involved with, on again, off again. I was on this bad drunk. And she's at work one day, and she bursts into tears. And a woman who just started with her company says, why is that woman crying? She's got this on again, off again boyfriend, bad drinker. Haven't seen him for a week. They might have to break the door down. She says, you know, my father's got a friend who's in this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. You want me to get his number? A phone call was made, and a note came under my door, locked up in this basement apartment, and it had a man's telephone number on it. And it said what I've been hearing since I was 15. You're a nice guy, but you drink too much. And I picked up the phone. Desperate times call for desperate measures. Bill Wilson sums up the end of an alcoholic's drinking better than anybody I've heard. He says quicksand stretched all around him. No matter which way I turned, there was nowhere to go. All my scorecards read zero. I picked up the phone. I called a complete stranger. And this guy had been in AA since 1961. I remember the old South Bronx group, and they had a mantra, we don't give up on anybody. And that guy literally, and D-Day is coming up, or today, and what that guy did, he parachuted right into the battlefield that had become my life. and led me right off the battlefield and brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, where I was able to acquire peace through honour through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't, because of you people, I haven't had to take a drink since I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. These guys have brought me to my first meeting. I was too sick to go the first night. I was 12-step. But 4 days later, I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I said, the greatest singular event in my life. At the end of my drinking, I just drank for unconscious time. I wanted the pain to go away. But there's always tomorrow. And the sun also rises. And the guilt. I'm not a sociopath. I knew the damage I did. I knew the bridges I burned. I would lie there in the dark and cringe of the things I'd done, the doors I'd slammed, the people I'd walked away from. And our drinking, you know how it is. We try to put it together, and then we, you know, we were lost. We were lost on the sea of booze. And there was any coordinates, it was pain and misery. And every once in a while, we wash up on dry land. But everything we built is built on sand. And the first drink always came along, washed out to sea with more debris. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of the power that I found in these rooms, my world today is built on concrete. And the world out there, which it will huff and it'll puff. But if I stay close to the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't have to drink no matter what, one day at a time. And I like to tell you that I come into AA and I took the ball and scored a touchdown. That's not what happened. It says in our book, Contemporary Investigation, you're looking at it. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard these steps being read and the program, and I'm Irish, stoic, don't tell nobody nothing. And these steps, they all seem very touchy, very feely, very warm and fuzzy. I figured I'll start doing these steps, I'll have wind chimes hanging up in the house, you know. Wearing flip-flops even in the winter time, you know. And joining Oprah's book club, where does it all end, you know. I was sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with barroom mentality. I brought me into Alcoholics Anonymous and change. You must change. And I'm sitting there hanging. It says, let go of your old ideas absolutely. And I was coming in here and I wouldn't let go of these old ideas. And I paid a price. I'm here to tell you, and this is where I know, 2.5 years off drink, jumping off place twice, different type of insanity. I came in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't owe very much money. Within 2.5 years in AA, I was thousands upon thousands of dollars in debt. I was still trying to fill the hole in my soul. And you can fool them at the meeting, but at 3:30 in the morning, I'm not fooling anybody. Another sleepless night. The guilt and the shame and remorse. I was full of resentment. And the thing about these resentments, they don't have any IQ. These resentments don't realize that this happened 20 years ago, 3,000 miles away. I'm experiencing these resentments like it's happening right now. And all the spiritual toxicity that's released in your body when you're living your life under unspiritual terms. And I'm trying to fool the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And people like, you know, I'm walking around here, but I'm smiling from the teeth out. How's it going, Paul? It's going great. And my life was completely unmanageable. And a guy came up to me one night in a meeting of AA and he saved my life. He says, Paul, you're dying. And you're dying in AA. And the help is right on the wall. You're like a starving man at a spiritual banquet. There's all this food on offer and you're living in the corner in bread and water. And he had my number. And against my better judgment, which is most things, everything that's helped me in AA has been against my better judgment, you know? I think I had to sign off and everything and give it my approval. And I realized that I had to move through this program. These people told me that we don't do these steps because they're nice, we do them for the necessary for recovery. And I've been doing that 1, 2, 3, 3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3, but that fourth step, holding on to some of the worst items in stock. And I'm such an alcoholic. I fought this program and I fought it and I fought it. And then I finally decided they want me to do a fourth step. I'm going to do the best fourth step that anybody's ever done in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to do a fourth step where people would stand around the coffee pot at night and talk about it. Did you hear about his fourth step? Was it really that good? Oh, yeah. It was exceptional. I want a newcomer to come up to me and go, are you the guy that wrote that fourth step that everybody talks about? And I'd be like, why, yes, I am. And yes, I did. And it really didn't take that long either. And my sponsor and sponsorship's essential. I heard a guy when he's passed away and I, Frank Hitch from the West Coast, and he said the fourth step takes as long as it takes in one night. I immediately blacked that out of my memory, you know. I'm an alcoholic and, you know, they talk about the big... My sponsor told me, Paul, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like driving to Florida. The big book will tell us exactly how to get there. Give us clear-cut directions we can't go wrong. The 12 and 12, let's think of it as a spiritual guidebook. It'll tell you what you might see along the way. But I'm an alcoholic. I can complicate a brown paper bag. I had every four-step guide that was ever printed. Four-step guides for men. Four-step guides for Irish men who lived just outside of Belfast. I had one four-step guide of 100 questions, 99 of which had nothing to do with why I drank in the first place. And I'm such an alcoholic, you know. I'm like, you know, I want to do this four-step so well. I'm not a guy, forget about having a piece of paper and a pen. I got flip charts, magic markers, I got highlighters, I got three pots of coffee going. There's a friend of mine says, you're like a dog running on linoleum, a lot of activity but no progress, you know? I got the phone off the hook, my sponsor's shouting up at the window. How's that fourth step coming? It's going well. How am I going to know when it's finished? Will it be like when they elect a new pope? Will there be a puff of white smoke coming out of your apartment? Oh, the fourth step has been completed. Look, the white smoke. And there was joy throughout the land, you know. And I'm sitting in my apartment. I lived in Rockaway Beach overlooking the ocean. And I have another spiritual awakening. Why am I sitting in this apartment? I should be down the boardwalk, looking at that special place where the sea meets the sky and drawing inspiration from that. So I slimmed down the operation and took it down to the boardwalk, you know. So I'm sitting on the boardwalk of my legal pad now, my big blank legal pad. And I'm still into aesthetics. I'm trying to draw the columns really, really straight, you know. I'm stopping strangers. Excuse me, these columns look perpendicular to you? Oh, those are wonderful. Who's your sponsor, Frank Lloyd Wright? And my sponsor caught up with me, says, Paul, what is this, like Charles Dickens? It was the best of times, it was the worst of times, you know, come on. There's no one-trick ponies in Alcoholics Anonymous. I put this stuff down and started to get free. And steps 4 through 9. And there's preparation followed by action. That's how the 4 through 9 worked for me. And 4 I wrote, and 5 I talked. And 6 I wrote, and 7 I talked. And 8 I wrote, and 9 I talked. Preparation followed by action. And I got free from the one guy I couldn't get free from. Those two hefty bags that I've been carrying around since the schoolyard, I started to let them go. I was talking to the guys before the meeting. We were put out of our house in Northern Ireland at the height of the Troubles. And I carried these guys around in my head. Emmett Fox talks about it, about having this mental prison. And the thing about having a mental prison, you got to do roll call every day. And why they're there and what they did for you. And it was only when I opened the door and let them go free that I got to go free too. And the steps, I'm not saying the steps are the panacea for every problem I ever had. But they brought me to a point in recovery where I could decide what was my work, what was God's work. And if I needed outside help, let the doctors be the doctors. And I'll tell you what Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I used to think, oh, the 12 steps, I'm working on me, and I'm working on me, and I'm working on me. That's all very good. I believe someday, somewhere, I'm going to be asked one question. What did you do with the gift that was given to you? Well, I worked on me. What did you do with the gift that was given to you? Shame on me if I put it in my back pocket. There's a story goes about a spiritual teacher, and he gave three very important coins to three of his pupils, and he went away on a foreign trip, and he came back. He said to the first one, "What did you do?" "Well, I invested it, and it came back 20-fold. Congratulations. "What did you do?" "I invested the coin. It came back 10-fold. Congratulations. "What did you do?" "Well, I buried it in the garden for safekeeping." "Shame on you." And that would be me if I kept this wonderful gift called Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill Wilson, and I've stood outside it on his anniversary night. He lay in Towns Hospital in December of 1934, and he had a vision of a chain of drunks, not just around New York, but around the whole world. A paradigm shift, one drunk helping another. A link in the chain. And that's what I asked myself. How strong is my link in the chain? Is it strong to the people that went ahead of me? And more importantly, is it strong to the people coming behind me? If someone comes to me and says, "Paul, can I go to that place that you speak about? Can I experience, comprehend the word serenity? Can I know peace?" Absolutely, walk this journey with us. Because we trudge this road together. There's a purpose to our lives tonight. There's a meaning. There's a rhythm. I'm not sitting in some bar tonight drunk trying to figure what it's about. I know what it's about. And it's a good thing to know that where you belong. This is where I belong. I belong in the lifeboat called Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's none of my business who's sitting next to me. It is my business if I'm willing to put my hand out to that person. For that I am responsible. Because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous done for me. And we're talking before the meeting. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I go back to meetings in Northern Ireland and they talk about people who normally don't mix. How about people who never mix? But they mix in one place. They sit in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous together. Because we realize here in Alcoholics Anonymous, we are survivors from the sinking ship. And we hang together or we die alone. And I want this beautiful gift to be around for many, many more years to come. And it's not easy. I'm not going to stand up here and tell you that I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and everything I touch, believe me. And that's what they told me now. They says, "Paul, we're not going to tell you that your life's going to get better. What we'll tell you is that you'll get better. And if you get better, chances are your life will get better too." And things happen. I thought Alcoholics Anonymous would give me immunity from life. That's not true. It gave me the ability to do what I couldn't do before, and that's live life on life's terms. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is the reality of my life today. Not what I think life should be like or I want to be like. How is my life today? The reality of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's days I'm sober and there's days I don't drink, but I stayed around here long enough to figure out the difference. And I know what to do, and I need help from you. I need to be connected to other alcoholics. I believe sobriety is like a backwater pond. It needs fresh water. If it doesn't get fresh water, it becomes stagnant. And nothing grows in stagnant water. I die, you die, we all die. What's the point? I got to continue to work this program. Mother Teresa said, I got to continue to empty myself of self because self returns like that. Mother Teresa says one time that even God can't fill a cup that's already full. I got to constantly work with others. Because when you talk about you, I find out about me. And to help others. And that's when my life caught on fire. Not working on myself. When I turned around and took another man through the steps. That's when my life caught on fire. That's when my life took on new meaning. That's when great events came to pass in my life. And he has awarded me. I thought it was cash and prizes. No. What Alcoholics Anonymous gave me was peace. To be lying in bed at night and not with the could-haves and the should-haves and the would-haves and the guilt and the shame and remorse. To be able to live in the one place I never lived. To let those two hefty bags full of garbage go. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous at 30 years of age. I didn't even have a high school diploma. 2.5 years sober and all the shame and disgrace and self-loathing that goes with that. I was a bartender and I was happy. I'm not drinking, I'll just work. And my sponsor says, "Paul, why don't you go to school?" I said, "I can't go to school." He says, "What if I fail?" He says, "Well, then you'll take the class again. How do we do things around here? Nothing beats a failure but a try. All Alcoholics Anonymous ask you to do is try." and I started to go to tech classes, and I enjoyed them. Got a degree, got another degree, two graduate degrees, only because of the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me to take on long-term goals, whether it be staying sober, getting an education, halfway decent mental health. You noticed I said halfway decent mental health. And chip away at them one day at a time. There's no quick fixes in Alcoholics Anonymous. No quick fixes. And I come in here and put my life back together one day at a time. And we do that together. And we help each other. There's a friend of mine. And I need to work this program. I need to be actively involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to be working these steps and bringing other guys through the steps. There's a friend of mine sat in Bill Wilson's office in 1967. And this brings home the power about as I move through steps 4 through 9. And he was carrying this one thing around, that one thing that we're never going to tell anybody. And he was sitting in Bill Wilson's office. I knew Bill pretty good. And Bill said to him, which apparently he did, he spoke about the collective experience of Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, Jerry, it's been our experience that those men or women who have tried to carry the load alone have paid a heavy price. Perhaps even drank. My friend listened to him, didn't do what was required, and 2 weeks later got drunk. The good news is he's back from 67. And he tells that story not to say that he knew Bill Wilson. He tells that story to say that you can be sitting with the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, but if you're not willing to do what's required around here, even that won't keep you sober. This is my miracle. I must participate in it. And I must participate on a daily basis. And as I thought my life would be all, I'd be a water walker in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd be able to do all this. Oh, everything would turn to gold. That hasn't been my story. Difficult things have happened to me in AA, but I've been through them a day at a time. I got married in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going through a divorce right now. I got a nine-year-old daughter. Very, very difficult. And these people helped me to get through that a day at a time. I had a heart attack in Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me just tell you this, and this really brings it home, how this thing is one day at a time. And how I need this program, I got to keep working it. And how it can go like that. I was lying in bed, and we were moving a house, and I'm lying on a blow-up mattress. The house is completely empty of furniture. Let me give you some advice. If you're ever going to have a heart attack, don't have it on a blow-up mattress, you know? I'm lying this blow-up mattress. I have a heart attack. I'm like a boated fish. I'm rolling back and forth trying to get out. And for some reason, I'm such an alcoholic. I had this heart attack, and I want to see what I look like, you know? So I crawled. I mean, you know where else? I crawl on my hands and knees down to the bathroom, and I pull myself up. I go, man, I look terrible, you know? And I slide back down. Then I call the ambulance, you know? And they rush me to the local hospital that says, no, bring him to the special hospital in New York called Long Island Jewish. And they got a 24-hour team on standby. And this is just to bring home the fact about dead of time reprieve. I get to the hospital and they're all waiting there, you know, the crash cart. And they said, asking all these questions. On a scale of 1 to 10, what's the pain like? Harold, when did it happen? I see a ring on your finger. You're married. And then I see the cross around my neck. And this is Long Island Jewish. The guy goes, I see the cross around your neck. Are you a Catholic? And I go, why, is it better if I'm Jewish? You know, I'm such an alcoholic. Let me keep my options open, you know. You never know, you know. The surgeon comes in. I'm like, oy vey, can you believe this is happening to me? I'm such an alcoholic, you know. And I flatline on the table. I'm dead for 3 or 4 minutes. Had the whole after-death experience. They bring me back to life, put some hardware in. I had a congenital problem since birth. Anyway, the story I'm trying to make is I leave that hospital. Had this whole after-death experience. And I said to anybody who would listen, which wasn't many, you're looking at the new me. With the program and this whole after-death experience, I'm not going to get annoyed in traffic anymore. I'm not going to get annoyed waiting in line anymore. And for about a week, I was like the Dalai Lama of New York, you know? Somebody had cut me off, I'd be like, peace be with you, my brother. I'm in no hurry. I've been to the other side. This is not all that important. Go right ahead, if you must. You don't call your sponsor. You don't make a few meetings. And self returns like that. And that's why I got to keep coming here. That's why I got to keep coming here. I'm going through this difficult period in my life. And I was almost going to not come and speak. I said, I'm 20 years sober. I'm going through this difficult period in my life. My life's upside down right now. Maybe I shouldn't even. And my sponsor says, what? You go and you tell that. You go and tell that story. You go and tell people how your life's upside down, but you're not drinking a day at a time. You tell people how you're trying to work the program under difficult circumstances. You tell the people how you're trying to practice these principles in affairs that maybe aren't very spiritual. Why don't you go and tell them that? And that's what I come here tonight, to share my experience, strength, and hope that my life is the way it is right now. And this is where the rubber meets the road. And the power that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to end on one story. As you realize, we've got a bit of an Irish connection this weekend here at this convention. And this just drives home the power of AA. Ireland was the first country in Europe that Alcoholics Anonymous went to in 1946. There was a guy in Philadelphia called Connor Flynn who went home to Ireland on a vacation. He had 2 years sobriety. And he realized there was no way in Ireland. He wrote a letter to New York and they said, well, why don't you just start a meeting? They sent him a startup kit and he started to go around Dublin to try to get a meeting started. And he was a bit like Bill Wilson 10 or 11 years earlier, getting a lot of closed doors, a lot of no thank yous. He was ready to give up hope. And we can never underestimate the power of the non-alcoholic in the growth of AA. Just like Henrietta Seiberling, the Irish version was Eva Jennings, a non-alcoholic woman. And he's sitting having breakfast in an hotel, and he gets talking to her, and he's telling her what he's trying to do. I took an ad in the newspaper, going nowhere. She says, I have a friend who works with alcoholics. Why don't you go and see him? And he went to this doctor, and this doctor says, this is 1946, and the doctor says, I'd never even heard of AA, and I detox people. He said, I'll tell you what, we got a guy down in one of the rooms here. He's been detoxed 20 or 30 times. There's times he's drunk on the way home from the hospital. If you can have any impact on him, I'll give you the full support of what's going on here. Connor Flynn went down just like I tried to do tonight. Experience, strength, and hope. Just like the man in the bed. Connor Flynn went down, and the guy in the bed was a guy called Richard Percival. A dead man walking. Dead. And Connor Flynn carried this message. Experience, strength, and hope. Harry drank. Harry got sober. Harry, the man in the bed, might get sober. Richard Percival had been talked to, talked that, preached over, preached that. But he realized this was different. This was somebody that understood him at a visceral level. This is somebody that understood him. And he wasn't talking about Richard's drinking. He talked about his own drinking. And Richard Percival got out of his bed and never took another drink to the day he died in 1971. And those two men started AA in Ireland. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the power of one alcoholic working with another. That's what got me sober. That'll keep you sober here tonight. I want to thank, and there's a few words from the place of my birth that I'd like to end on. I want to thank everybody here tonight for letting me come here and share my experience, strength, and hope. And just bear with me, this sums up how I feel about you, how I feel about AA. There's two things that are very close to me, and it's Ireland and Alcoholics Anonymous, and this sums up both of them. May the road rise to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face. The rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Thank you. Good night and God bless.